If genius can reveal how little we actually know about our universe and ourselves, then mathematician Kurt Gödel was some genius. In 1931, he came up with Gödel's incompleteness theorem, which demonstrates that mathematics can't prove everything. Just 2 years ago, Time magazine conducted a poll to determine the 20 most influential thinkers of the 20th century. Of course, Albert Einstein was first, but Kurt Gödel was ninth, ranked above maybe better-known thinkers, including Jonas Salk, Enrico Fermi, and John Maynard Keynes. Kurt Gödel's incompleteness theory is now enjoying a kind of revival. It is being cited by modern-day scientists in the field of artificial intelligence. Nothing artificial about the intelligence of our friend Keith Devlin, the math guy, who rejoins us now from the studios of Youth Radio in Berkeley. Keith, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Scott.
Keith, I'm guessing that somebody who can understand the infield fly rule ought to be able to understand Gödel's incompleteness theorem, so help us, please.
Okay. In a nutshell, Gödel's incompleteness theorem says that there are mathematical statements which we know are true, but which we can never, ever prove. In mathematics,
Keith, a lot
however,
of people think UFOs are true, too. And then when you say you can't prove it, they go, well, yeah, of course.
Well, right. Yeah. Now, the reason this was a big deal in pure mathematics was that proofs are at the very heart of pure mathematics. When Gödel proved this in 1931, it shook the mathematical world right down to its cotton socks, because it changed forever the way we think about what mathematics is and what mathematics can do.
So, in a sense, the building blocks of mathematical thoughts had to be reassessed?
Right, because in most sciences, in fact, in all of the other sciences, if you want to decide whether something's true or false, you perform an observation, you look through a microscope or a telescope maybe, or you create and perform some kind of experiment. That's not what we do in mathematics. In mathematics, if we want to decide whether something is true or false, we prove it using a logical argument. Now, those proofs have to begin somewhere, so the process begins by writing down the basic assumptions, the postulates, or what we call the axioms, which we're going to use. It's almost like the Bill of Rights or the Constitution. This is the foundation of what we do in mathematics. Mm-hmm. Axioms are things that are so simple and so obvious that their truth is not in question. Things like, oh, two parallel lines never meet, or if you add two numbers together, it doesn't matter which one comes first. Mm-hmm. Those are the axioms that we start the process off with.
Well, let me ask, though. It doesn't matter in which order you add two numbers together?
Right. You're just going to have to trust me on that one, Scott. I get paid a very handsome salary for knowing things like that.
Oh, pulling rank, are you?
Absolutely.
All right. I'll take your word for it, okay. Master. When Gödel developed his theorem, what changed then?
In terms of the everyday practice of mathematics, well, in terms of applied mathematics, applying mathematics to the world, directly nothing changed. And even within mathematics, in some senses, nothing changed with regard to the practice. Pythagoras' theorem remained true. The theorems in Euclid's Elements remained true. What changed was our expectation of what mathematics could do. Throughout the 19th century, the axiomatic method, this method of proving things from axioms, had proved incredibly successful. Most of the mathematics that now lies behind modern science, technology, and medicine and the world we live in, that mathematics was developed using the axiomatic method. So there was this great faith that this method it was so strong and so powerful, it could do anything. Mm-hmm. Well, we got our comeuppance. Gödel showed that now it may be strong and powerful, but like everything else in the world, it has its limits.
And he proved this mathematically?
Right. And it's this, you've got to be very careful when you understand it. He's not simply saying that there are things that we don't know how to prove. Mm-hmm. He's saying there are things that we can prove cannot be proved. It's inherently paradoxical. In fact, his proof is a mathematical analogue of a very famous paradox that goes back to ancient Greece called the liar paradox. If I say to you over the microphone now, I am lying, then that statement is paradoxical. If it's true, then it's got to be false. And if it's false, it's got to be true. You can't decide whether I'm telling the truth or not when I say to you, I am lying.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say about reporters. You know how you can tell they're like politicians and mathematicians. Right. You know how you can tell they're lying?
Right.
Their lips are moving.
Their lips are moving, right. Okay. Now, but the surprising thing was that kind of thing could afflict mathematics was just revolutionary.
Tell us a bit, if you could, Keith, about Kurt Gödel, the man who died in 1978.
He was a remarkably talented individual. I mean, he was just extremely smart. But there were all sorts of interesting stories about him. He came over to the United States, went to the Institute of Advanced Study in Princeton and became a colleague of Albert Einstein. And according to one story, which I think is pretty reliable, when he was going to become a citizen and he was going to the, what do we call it? I went through this myself a few years ago. It's not the indoctrination ceremony, it's something else. The naturalization ceremony.
Right, naturalization ceremony, yeah.
When he went to the naturalization ceremony.
No, that was a special one for you, Keith.
That was special
for
me.
They tried to get rid of that silly accent.
Absolutely, and failed miserably. Okay, bring me your huddled masses, yes. Now, when he went to the naturalization ceremony, according to the story, he'd discovered a logical flaw in the U.S. Constitution, and he was going to bring this up with the naturalization service. And according to the story, Albert Einstein, very wisely, I think, talked him out of doing that. Another story about Gödel is... actually, it's more than a story. It's rather tragic. The nature of his death is really rather bizarre because as he got older, he became increasingly concerned about his health. Now, that's not bizarre. Most of us do that as we get older. Mm-hmm. But he got very paranoid about the fact that he thought he was being poisoned. And that got to be so bad that eventually the fear of being poisoned led him to stop eating. And the results were, of course, that he starved himself to death, which, you know, for one of the greatest logicians the world has ever seen, that's a decidedly odd way to end your life.
Are there ways in which Kurt Gödel's influence can be felt in our everyday lives even today?
Oh, right. And there are two very dramatic ones. First of all, the attempt that mathematicians made to come to terms with Gödel's theorem led to the development of mathematics, which led directly to the development of computers. So you can trace computer technology right back to the proof of Gödel's theorem and the mathematical response it invoked. There's a more present-day version of that in what's happening with the World Wide Web. The Tim Berners-Lee and the other folks that brought us the World Wide Web have recently been trying to bring the next generation of web into being, and it's called the semantic web. The idea is they're going to take ideas from artificial intelligence and incorporate those into the web. So the web behaves intelligently. If we put in something in a search engine, instead of getting 4,000 responses, the system will be intelligent enough to figure out which two dozen of those 4,000 responses we're really interested in. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to put some intelligence into the web, and if they succeed, it's going to be called the semantic web. Behind that web, behind that semantic web, lurks the ghost of Gödel. Gödel's sort of hovering behind the semantic web, and every now and then he's going to come forward and he's going to say, you can't do that. My theorem says what you're trying to do simply can't be done.
Why can't it be done?
And the reason that is that when you try to do something on the web, you're going to have to reduce it to mathematical manipulations. You're going to have to code into those computers that form the web the axioms and the rules of deduction in order for the web to function. Mm-hmm. Gödel's theorem says that the moment you start to do that, you're going to limit yourself. There are going to be things that are true, that users of the web want to know and want to use, that won't be captured within the rules that the web is using. So the web will fail to do some of the things that people want it to do. There's no escape from that. Gödel's theorem is rock solid. The limitations apply to the World Wide Web.
Keith, thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure, Scott, as usual.
Keith Devlin, the math guy, professional mathematician, living in Moraga, California, and author of the book, The Math Gene.